Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey, smoother than smooth. Mitch Light from The Athletic is on the line with us. We talk college football with him and the SEC right after Derek Mason every Tuesday on the program. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good. Darren, that was, I know it's not your choice, maybe Elijah, that was kind of mellow music leading in. I'm not the most, you know, usually I like to get motivated, get fired up for this. I'm kind of laid back now.
Okay, well.
I felt like we were on an elevator.
Yeah. I'm a professional mood setter.
Ah, yeah, yes, you are.
There you go.
That's fine. That's fine. I can get ready. I can. Hey, you know my college football teams this year with not many fans there. They got to self motivate. I can do that. I can get fired up on my own.
Maybe they could have used this music at halftime for the Missouri Florida game to keep maybe the tempers under control. The SEC doled out some penalties yesterday as Florida gets ready for their big tilt against Georgia, and we really have not been able to, unfortunately, and I've wanted to get to this, Mitch, so I just kind of have pushed it off to the side and said, well, I'm going to make sure I get to it with you. I got to be honest, I am surprised at the lack of, and maybe I'm missing it here, maybe there has been, a discussion of Dan Mullen's actions on Saturday, which I thought was completely out of control for a head coach in the SEC, and why he didn't get hammered more than he did. He is just as much of a problem as his kids were, his student athletes. Him running out there like a maniac trying to chase and grab anybody he could, to me, only enhanced or incited what took place. I thought his actions were an absolute failure. He deserved an F as a head coach, and he's kind of blown it off like he didn't do anything wrong. And I completely disagree. How do you feel about what took place?
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought it was completely uncalled for. You look to head coaches at times like that to calm their teams down, and the way he raced across the field, you know, incites kind of the right word, I think, there. He poured kind of lighter fluid on a volatile situation. And, you know, I understand. It's funny because he admitted afterwards he didn't even see the late hit on Kyle Trask, which was definitely a late hit. It was dirty. It wasn't the most egregious thing you'll ever see. He just kind of saw the reaction, and he sprinted across the field. And if you recall 2 years ago, similar thing happened at Vanderbilt and he almost came to blows with Derek Mason, who's kind of like the most popular guy in coaching. Everyone likes Coach Mason. That was different because it was on the Florida sideline, so he didn't have to sprint across the field. And then, you know, I'm sure you also saw, he goes into the tunnel, and then he comes out,
yes,
and he waves his arms three or four times for the Florida fans that were there. And then, you know, he shows up in the Darth Vader costume and for Halloween afterwards, only fined $25,000. I mean, he's got kind of a reputation as a hothead, obviously, two incidents there. And our Alan Taylor, who writes for us, covers the Florida State Athletic, kind of wrote a story afterwards. He's like, you know, as long as he's got his team behind him, he doesn't care. And he does. So, you know, $25,000 to him is nothing. He probably doesn't really care about his reputation. He doesn't think he did much wrong there. But I'm with you. It's hard to say how much attention something got. I mean, I saw a lot about it, but you know, maybe it wasn't because if it was the Florida-Georgia game, it would have been different. But it was the Florida Missouri game, which was on ESPN, was on SEC Network Alternate, which for me on DirecTV, they didn't even put it on until midway through the second quarter. I was actually watching it online, and it wasn't a very high-profile game. But I'm with you there. That's just very sometimes we say things aren't becoming of the president. That's not becoming of a head coach in the SEC.
Yeah, agreed. I just thought he would get hammered more, and quite honestly, I thought it was a pretty pathetic response by the league. I mean, $25,000 fine? To Dan Mullen? I mean, you might as well just – I mean, that's like fining us a dollar. I mean, what message did that send to him? I didn't think it sent a message at all, and I thought he was way out of control on Saturday. And like you said, I'm glad you brought that up. The coming back out and, you know, getting the crowd up, it's like what you just did was not even acceptable, and you came out for an encore? Give me a break.
I'm with you. I'm with you 100%.
All right, so how do you think this Florida-Georgia game is going to play out, with that being said?
I'm fascinated by it. You know, this has been a interesting series. I just did some research on it. And they've alternated three-game winning streaks. Over the last 12 years, it's been, you know, Florida 3, Georgia 3, Florida 3, and Georgia 3. And Georgia's the team that's currently on the streak right now, and they have done a really, really good job defensively against Florida in the last 3 years. I think Florida's averaging like 270 yards in the last 3 years against Georgia. They have really shut them down. I thought Florida played probably its best game on Saturday when you considered the opponent. Not that Missouri's great, but they played well. They were missing some guys in the secondary. Now they did get some. Kyrie Campbell, really good senior defensive tackle, came back, really shored up that defensive line. So I thought they played very well. Kadarius Toney's a guy we've been hearing about for 3 or 4 years as a playmaker and has never really found a role. He's tied for the team lead with, I think, 10 touchdowns with Kyle Pitts. So I think they're going to cause some problems for Georgia's defense. It's a great, good offense, good defense, and, you know, flip it on the other side, you know, other side of the ball. So I think it's an intriguing matchup. I still think Georgia is the more talented team. If you look at recruiting rankings, Florida clearly has the edge at quarterback and probably at the skill position. So, you know, we're going to find out how important quarterback play is. And Andy Staples had a column on The Athletic today about what a big game it is for both coaching staffs. Not that either guy's on the hot seat by any stretch, but it's a game that both fan bases expect to win. I keep talking here, Darren, because I haven't decided who I'm going to pick yet. I'd probably lean towards Georgia, just the overall talent edge there. But I'm really intrigued by this Florida team, especially the way they played Saturday night.
Yeah. Speaking of Georgia, I watched a lot of their game against Kentucky. It was a tough watch. Georgia was in control. I know the final was 14-3, but I never felt like Kentucky was ever going to win that game. But I do want to talk about the Kentucky side of things. Their defense
Before you go on, Darren, interruption there, because I never want to talk about Kentucky. I was surprised by this after watching a decent amount of that game. From a yards per play, that was Georgia's best offensive game of the year. They just didn't have many plays. They averaged 6.1 yards per play. That's their best of the season, which surprised me. But so go ahead on Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, look, rarely do you see a game that finished 14-3 and you say a team was in control. But I felt like Georgia was in control the entire game, and yet the final was 14-3. Kentucky has really surprised me with their defense. I mean, I don't see a bunch of dudes, you know, like guys that stand out where you go, whoa, you'll be seeing them on Sundays. But I'll tell you what, it works. You know, whatever they're doing right now, it works. But I want to ask you about the things on the offense, which are abysmal. They're not a good offensive team. Joey Gatewood was that his first ever start? Is that right? First ever start?
Yeah.
Big body, big frame. I could not have been, and I know it's his first start ever, but big kid, I thought he was slow. I just was not impressed at all. Indecisive, didn't really know what to do. Let's just say my first impression, not very good. What did you make of Gatewood, and is it just, do you just chalk it up his first start, and it's Georgia, and you think he'll get a whole lot better, or what do you think?
Yeah, I want to see more. I mean, I think that's the first start and the fact that it's against Georgia. You got a coaching staff that doesn't feel great about itself offensively. They're not going to really – I think their goal was not to fall behind too quickly, that they thought if they could keep it within one or two scores, they didn't want to screw things up and maybe get a lucky bounce or, you know, pick six or two like they did against Tennessee. So I think it was a pretty conservative game plan. He was a top – I think he's a top 100 national recruit, you know, at Auburn. A big recruit, lost his job to Bo Nixon and transferred. So I wouldn't quite give up on Joey Gatewood by any stretch. But I'm kind of surprised, like you are, with both the offense struggling, because I've been a big Eddie Grant fan. I think he's an underrated coordinator. They kind of reinvent themselves every year based on their talent or lack thereof. What we saw last year where they had to, you know, bring a wide receiver and play quarterback. And defensively, they don't have a Josh Allen. Not that many schools have a Josh Allen or, you know, school of like Kentucky. And then remember a couple, 2 years ago, too, they had that great veteran secondary, some guys in the NFL now. You don't, like you said, you don't see a bunch of dudes on that side of the ball. So I think it's a team that kind of knows what it is and is going to be very conservative until it feels better about itself offensively. And they're going to have to win games 20-14. But, you know, the last 2 weeks they've really struggled to move the ball. And I know a lot of Kentucky fans were hoping the quarterback change from Terry Wilson to Joey Gatewood would kick things kick that offense, get it going. But I think it's tough to expect that, like I said before, in his first start against a defense like Georgia.
Talking to Mitch Light, one of the college football editors for the Athletic Squad, theathletic.com, great college football coverage. Mitch, at the risk of making us sound old, which we're getting fast, we've been watching Vanderbilt football for about 30, 35 years now, depending on when we started watching in high school as we started getting interest in Vanderbilt. So that's our reference point. For people that know, it's easy to paint a broad brush and say, for the most part, the program is in a constant state of struggle. They've had some flashpoints with James Franklin. They've been to a couple of bowls with Derek Mason. But to those who follow every year, like we do, there are different levels of struggle. And this is at a level that reminds me of some teams in the dying times of some coaches, so Watson Brown, a Bobby Johnson, which turned into Robbie Caldwell, basically, a Woody Woodenhofer. Can he get out of this hole? I'm a little concerned. It was just so easy for a mediocre Ole Miss team to go in there and win decisively. What are you seeing there, and is there any kind of material where he can build a foundation to create hope for next year?
Yeah, and I mean, the big picture question, as I was reminding my daughter, who's a sophomore at Vanderbilt, who was, you know, kind of complaining about the football team struggles, I said, my first 2 years in college, Vanderbilt went 1-10 and 1-10.
Right.
So don't talk to me, you know. But Jerry DiNardo came in and kind of turned things around. But yeah, and I will say, I mean, not to defend anything, but, you know, Ole Miss is a very, very good offensive team. I think we predict, you know, I don't think it was going to be that easy, but if you would have told me Ole Miss was going to score 50 points, I would have said, okay, I wouldn't have been shocked. But I thought Vanderbilt could have made it a game more deep into the second half. But, yeah, I mean, the struggles, if the phrase goes, the struggle is real. I mean, when you're kind of evaluating programs that struggle, you kind of look at how competitive they are. And Vanderbilt's lost 13 games over the last 2 years. Only one of them, the Texas A&M game to start this year, was a margin of defeat fewer than 17 points. That's alarming right there. Because, like, 2018, they went 6-7, go to the bowl game, 5 of the 7 losses by 10 points or fewer. It was a competitive program that could have won some more games. Last 2 years, it's just hasn't been competitive. And the defense has been had no answer for the run or the pass consistently over the last 2 years. Now, is there hope? You know, I think they found a quarterback in Ken Seals. There's some young pieces on offense that look, you know, fine. But, you know, I think the thing with Vanderbilt right now, if you ask opposing coaches in the league, who scares you on that team? Who do you have to scheme against? There's not many guys. And in the past, there's, you know, even some bad Vanderbilt teams have had some really good future NFL cornerbacks or a linebacker here or there. Then, you know, obviously the last couple of years, there's some really good pieces offensively. I just don't see it right now. Again, I think the quarterback, Ken Seals, can be a good player, can be an SEC-caliber quarterback, but the overall talent on the roster isn't where it needs to be.
It's at a crisis point for sure. I got a couple of national picture questions here, and I know Chase is going to ask you about Tennessee and Arkansas, which is a giant game in the scheme of things for UT. Break down the difference in Clemson's roster and Notre Dame's roster, given that Trevor Lawrence is not in the equation. I watched Clemson. Of course, they struggled with Boston College. Of course, they had the 14-point swing, which changed a lot of things. There was a lot of things that went Boston College way in the first half, and to Clemson's credit, they didn't lose their poise, and they still came back and won it. But how tough will this game be against the Irish?
You know, but to your point, I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm not, you know, when we look at these elite programs, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, if they don't win by 35 points, we look for issues. You know, what's the problem? And Clemson had that. Again, they didn't make the play. It was a bad handoff, and BC made the play. But that's a 14-point swing there. And I thought that the play, if you watched the end of the first half, I thought it was a really, really questionable late hit call on Clemson on the BC quarterback that kept a drive going, and then they scored again there right before the half. So I think a few things, more things go Clemson's way. The score's more lopsided. From a talent standpoint, Clemson is the far superior team. I mean, that's no shock there. I don't, with some of the injuries they've had there, I don't think they scare you as much at the wide receiver position. Obviously, Travis Etienne, everyone knows how good he is. Notre Dame is solid. Yeah, when I've watched them this year, I haven't been overly impressed with their skill. Book has been a good quarterback. I don't know how much better he's gotten since when he broke into the lineup at the late in his sophomore year. The running back, Williams, is solid. If this were a normal year and it was a Saturday night at Notre Dame Stadium and it was packed with a quarterback making a second start versus road start, I'd feel a lot better about Notre Dame's chances. But I think this is one where the talent just rises to the top, and I think Clemson wins kind of comfortably.
It'd be something to watch for sure. And what about Ohio State? Are they as advertised in your mind?
Yeah, they're great. I mean, I've watched pretty much every snap of both their games. It's a team with very few weaknesses. Like, they complain, like, I mean, by complain, the media and the fans, the media that's kind of analyzing them, that their running backs aren't as explosive as they need to be because they had J.K. Dobbins last year. But, I mean, Master Teague, we know him from Murfreesboro, and then Trey Sermon, the Oklahoma transfer. Those are good running backs. They're not All-America running backs, but that's like kind of first-world problems, that they don't have an All-American running back. So their defensive line played really well against Penn State. That was an area where they were concerned about their depth coming into the year. They played really well there. They've got great wide receivers. And Fields, for whatever reason, just the time of the games didn't, with my work at doing sidelines at Vanderbilt last year, I didn't see a ton of Ohio State last year, and I know he's probably gotten better, but Fields is amazing. I mean, he's just what he's got.
Joe Rexrode has him number one on his Heisman list. He's got him ahead of Lawrence right now.
Yeah, I do too. We have a Heisman, all the writers and editors at The Athletic, we do a Heisman ballot every week, and I had him number one. I mean, I think he's the best player in the country. He's got, more touchdowns than incomplete passes, and he is
– That's pretty good.
He can beat you with his legs if he needs to, but they don't really need him to or want him to. So I've been, I know more about Ohio State than I ever thought I would, just because it's one of the teams I work closely with the writer. But they are, there's, like you said, the term as advertised, they're as advertised.
We're talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic, all things college football here on the show. So Willie mentioned it, Tennessee, Arkansas this weekend. Tennessee, a 1.5-point favorite. They've had inconsistent play at quarterback, whereas Arkansas, Felipe Franks transfers in from Florida, and he's been pretty solid for them. And Sam Pittman, first-year head coach, seems to have that program, I'm not going to say fully turned around at 2-3, but looking a lot better than people thought that they would. So what are your initial thoughts on this matchup on Saturday?
Yeah, and I think we talked last week, and I don't get a lot of games right, but I'll pat myself on the back. I guess I got it wrong because I thought A&M would cover, the old backdoor cover by Arkansas. I thought that was going to be kind of a market correction game for Arkansas, where they were forcing a ton of turnovers. They led the league with 10 interceptions, and that's not very sustainable. So they went down to College Station, a rare Texas A&M Arkansas game on campus. You know, they usually play in Dallas. I think it was the first one on campus since 2012. Got handled by a good Texas A&M team. You know, from an overall talent standpoint, Tennessee's a better team. But as we've talked about all year, Arkansas has talent. That wasn't the problem the last few years. They were awful, but they had some talent in that roster. I think I will pick Tennessee going into that game. I don't think they are as bad. Well, they're not as bad as they played the last two times we saw them. I think it's obviously an important game in the one loss for Jeremy Pruitt, whether they win or lose. But I'm eager to see how they look. Because if they come out and lay an egg on the road after the bye week, after the two previous performances, then the heat really gets going. It's sort of like, what have you been doing the last 2 weeks? Right. Especially after the Alabama game and the Kentucky game. I think they'll play well. I think they'll be able to run the ball. If they can run the ball, take some pressure off Garantano, that will obviously help some things. What you obviously don't want to do is go in there, make an early mistake, and you get the here-we-go-again thing going. But they're playing an Arkansas team that probably still feels pretty good about itself. And Tennessee's probably looking around, not quite sure how to feel about itself, and wondering if it can play well on the road.
Why do you think it's worked so well with Sam Pittman? Because he was a position coach. I didn't know much about him. But it seems like he's come in there and really they've bought in so far to him as the head coach.
Yeah, he made great hires. Barry Odom, defensive coordinator, who, you know, going back to his days at Memphis, was kind of young, up-and-coming coordinator. Didn't work out for him in Missouri, but they, you know, had good defenses there. And then Kendall Briles, good coordinator, good young coordinator. And like I said, they inherited some talent. Getting the quarterback situation was solidified. That was a revolving door the last few years of transfers. But Franks has done a good job. They have some good running backs, some good young running backs. The one thing they did recruit well the last couple of years is receivers. And Pittman is just, you know, he's beloved by his players. Now, it's one thing to be beloved by your offensive linemen. You know, most offensive line coaches, lots of offensive linemen love their position coach. But to transfer that as the CEO of the program, he's been able to do that. And, yeah, I don't know if you know, I know Willie knows Kyle Parkinson, who used to be the Vanderbilt baseball media relations director and then went over to football for a year before going back to his alma mater at Arkansas. And I talked to Kyle this summer, and he was just telling me, like, we got the right guy. I mean, this guy's he's amazing. All of a sudden, I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, you hear that all the time. First year coach hasn't coached the game. But it matters. That stuff matters. You know, first year, getting guys to buy in, they are completely bought in, and having results early helped. Even though they lost that Georgia game, the way they played coming out of the gates after all that losing that team did, anybody who was on the fence in that locker room, they were in Sam Pittman's corner after that. So, you know, football's it's a coaching game. And you know, still early in his tenure, but it looks like they got the right guy there.
You said you're going Tennessee?
Yes, I think going Tennessee. Is it the best game of the weekend? No, but it's
intriguing.
It's one of the most interesting games of the weekend, no doubt about that.
I lean Arkansas, so we'll see how it turns out. Appreciate the time as always, Mitch. We'll do it again next week.
All right, sounds good, Chase. Take care, bud.
Mitch Light, The Athletic, joins us. Mitch after Mason is what we call it, after Derek Mason every week here on the show. Darren Donick and Chase, we'll wrap it up next. But first, Darren, tell us about Cool Springs MD.
I will, and I have been for years, you know, if you've been listening to this show, because I've been going there for years. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, who is the board-certified physician, his wife Daphne, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff have been helping me, along with a lot of you, here in the Middle Tennessee area. They've been doing it since 2007 in a lot of categories. Man, they house a lot of things under one roof, and they would love to improve your quality of life. I know I want that, and hopefully you do too. And maybe you haven't been feeling the same lately. You've been feeling off, like something's not right. Well, go in there and talk to them about hormone replacement therapy, because typically as we get older, your levels go down, and when your levels go critically down, it can really affect how you feel. It can really affect your day-to-day operations. You just feel really off or sluggish. You just don't have any, you know, get up and go to you, and you can't figure out why. Maybe you've always been active, but you haven't been lately. Well, they can certainly help you in that way. Face and body rejuvenation, weight loss management, certainly we understand that in 2020. Maybe you've put on some unwanted pounds. Maybe when your local gym that you're in a routine and working out closed for a good while, and since it's reopened, you just haven't been able to get back into it. Everybody gets it. Well, they've got programs and people that can get you headed in the right direction. If you need to schedule an appointment or a consultation, just pick up the phone and dial 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or you can learn everything you need to know about them on their website by going to coolspringsmd.com.
Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.